Hi, everyone, and welcome to Connections, a special Sunday edition of our program with some of the clips or highlights from this past week. I'm Bill Newell, along with Rick Moore. We also like to remind you that you can contact us by emailing us at any time at msonewsports@gmail.com, msonewsports@gmail.com, or leave a message on our 24/7 phone message line at 978-325-3638. That's 978-325-3638. We have a great show for you Monday, tomorrow morning, starting at 10 a.m. So let's begin with some of the highlights from this past week. We found out in downtown Gloucester that the YMCA may be closed to members, but it's not closed to the community and how it serves the community. This is the executive director of the KFAN YMCA, Tim Flaherty.
Well, no, we're running emergency child care, number one, for the first responders. And we're also we're operating a homeless shelter here in conjunction with Action, Inc. And the Gray Center here in Gloucester. We had a nice little relationship with the mayor and told her we could do anything to help out during the situation while the Y is, you know, physically closed. We got together and decided, hey, this would be a great location to help out with the homeless population because of social distancing. We have 30 down at the Action homeless shelter, and then there's 30 here that have turned the gymnasium into a housing facility with a kitchen and beds, and they have shower facilities here. So it's really worked out well, and they got tested. They're all clean. It kind of helps out them, helps out the community, and we're glad the Y could be of help.
Tim Flaherty, the executive director of the KFAN YMCA. In today's, that's Sunday's, Boston Globe, Rich Fahey, who was a guest recently on Connections, has a column out. It's in the local section, Olympics are off this year, but this senior is seeking indoor gold. That's the headline on the story. Rich Fahey, recently on Connections, tells us the story behind that story.
Well, it's hard to find. I think the first thing to go when we have a situation like this is our ability to laugh. And of course, that's vital to us, to our existence as human beings. So what I put together, and I hope is going to run soon, the local section of the Boston Globe, is a piece about an inside Olympics for seniors who are quarantining. You could have events tailored right to us and our abilities and our, what called, like, perhaps we'd do extreme digital couponing where you could do what I did recently and bring down a $54 purchase to $22.59 just by hacking a few coupons. We could do seniors versus technology where we all attempt to set up that Amazon Echo we got years ago, we never opened. And at the end, we'd have a group of 8-year-olds come down to show us how we should have done it. There's also the doing crossword puzzles in ink and without using a smartphone event, which I think would be especially daring. But you get the idea. There's the story that never ends competition for us who tend to go on. The prescription challenge, where we would have to name all the drugs we're taking, the strength of those drugs, and the amount we take daily. Well, the greatest events I've ever slept through, my late dad, Tom Fahey, I got him a matinee for Les Miserables, but he did call it the greatest event he'd ever slept through after he experienced it. So that's what it's about, just trying to give people a chuckle and maybe have us laugh, us seniors, get a laugh at our own expense, because you look in the mirror and we can laugh at ourselves a little bit, because really that's the best kind of humor when you don't take yourself too seriously and you're able to laugh.
Rich Fahey, writer for the Boston Globe and also with his On Boston Stages blog. And we've talked to him many times about entertainment. And again, the column, Olympics are off this year, but this senior is seeking indoor gold. And we do have a link to it up here on the post, on this Connections post. And now with more, here is Rick Moore.
Hey, thanks, Bill. Barry Pett is a Gloucester City Councilor, and we talked with him on Monday. Interestingly enough, he had a different take on the virus. He, in his opinion, is saying that the social distancing is actually bringing people together.
Well, I think what it's done is it's sort of put everything in perspective. I think if you're running for any sort of public office, I work for Senator Tarr for over 15 years and retired, you know, somewhat for my health issues or whatever. And so I wanted to continue in the community, and I've been doing a lot of things for Gloucester anyway. When you get into this sort of a situation, it definitely brings you a lot closer to a lot of people, even though you may not be physically closer. You're communicating with them more. You're working together closer with them. And I think we're lucky, both here in Gloucester and in Massachusetts, that we do have different branches of, power or elective bodies, whether it be at the state level, you know, the legislature and the executive branch, or here in Gloucester, where we have the city council, and the administration is sort of the same thing. Again, the council being the legislative branch and the administration being the executive branch, and we work very, very closely together. And this crisis has really brought that all together, where we have the mayor. Mayor Taken has done such a phenomenal job of coordinating everything within her staff. And the Karen at the Public Health Department, and Jonathan at the Fire Department, the Emergency Management, you know, side of the house, and the Police Chief, everybody together, and even things like the DPW, working together with the city council. And the city council is, you know, nine councilors, nine different people, and we have different opinions about different things. But using things like our, you know, the Zoom technology, et cetera, we're able to come together and have conversations. And even though it may be moving forward at a slower pace than normal.
That's Gloucester City Councilor Barry Pett. On Tuesday, we chatted with Paul Murphy, who is the chairman of the Board of Selectmen up in Rockport, and he said that Rockport's Board of Selectmen is most definitely supporting the governor's guidelines.
Yeah, I mean, we have not hit the peak, I don't think, we're a small community, about 8,000 people year round. It almost triples in the summer with summer residents and so forth, but. We did take an early stance, and we shut again to protect people, and it wasn't popular, and I've heard negative situations or negative comments about this whole thing, but I think we erred. We always, when we're talking as a board and with the town administrator and other public officials, I always stated that, you know, we're doing all this under abundance of caution, just to make sure that we're doing all the right things, so that we protect the citizens of Rockport, which is the most important job if you're on the Board of Selectmen. And I think we've done a good job. Has it been perfect? No. I mean, this thing is changing from moment to moment, practically. But we're responding. The town administrator, Mitch Rivera, with his code red messages coming out, with updates and so forth, has been great. And people have gotten the information. Not that everyone agrees on everything that we've done, but at least they have the information, and I'm hoping that things will settle down in the next couple of weeks, and we will gradually begin to opening things up again. And that's paramount at this point.
That's Rockport Town of Selectmen Chairman Paul Murphy. Wednesday, we talk with Corey DiDonato. She is the CEO of Silver Tiger Consulting, and she explained how the pandemic emergency has affected her business.
Is their first attempt at trying to bring some of their educational material online.
All right, and how has it affected your business?
So, in my consulting practice, we work primarily with businesses in the construction industry and health and fitness. I also own CrossFit Silver Tiger, so as you can imagine, a lot of gyms have been closed. This is sort of a kind of a new environment for us to work in with this forced closure. And my consulting business, since it also works with other, like you mentioned, restaurants, but businesses in the construction industry, and also retail salons and spas, it's become quite the economic crisis. As you can imagine, a lot of these businesses had already seen drop-offs in the weeks and even the months prior to the actual official closure. For example, I have construction businesses that starting in early March were not allowed in by companies into the construction sites if they were working in a building with other employees, because the companies had passed internal regulations saying we're not going to allow any non-employees on site. Mm-hmm. And that also affected my in-person workshops. I think the last one I actually was able to run was in early March, and the one right after that, I had been notified by clients that their companies had passed policies that the employees were no longer allowed to travel to meetings. So it's just been, across the board, dealing with a lot of private policies that different companies are doing to protect their employees, plus different cities, towns have different policies, and then of course we have the statewide policy. So it's mostly, from what I've seen, it's been an economic situation, and of course everybody's trying to make sure that, you know, if we can reopen eventually, that everybody's safe, and what that will look like, we just don't have enough information.
That's Corey DiDonato, the CEO of Silver Tiger Consulting in Wakefield. Thursday, Bill Kirk was up next. Of course, Bill is the eagle eye on the Merrimack Valley from the Lawrence Eagle Tribune, who does podcasts with us here on MSO. And he was talking about a restaurant owner up in Andover who is very anxious to hear about the reopening guidelines.
In Methuen, I've been writing stories about the... I don't know if you've heard the story about the police contracts, and the superior officers in particular were negotiated this contract where the top officer pay went from, I think, a maximum of, I don't know, whatever it was, 150, 160,000, up to literally some of them were slated to make over $400,000 a year. They would have been the highest paid police officers in the country based upon this contract that they negotiated. So obviously the city council, the mayor at the time, who was Juga, he fought it. The city council fought it, and they knocked the pay down to around $200,000 or something like that, which was still too much for some people. So they're sort of locked in this. They're in arbitration right now, waiting for a decision, or actually a hearing in March to go over this. And they're sort of locked in this battle with the union folks. And the mayor, who's Neil Perry, he's a new mayor in Methuen, and he just announced he's going to have an audit. He's going to pay for, you know, get the money for to do an audit of the police department, and just sort of look at the whole operation from top to bottom, and including this crazy salary increases that these guys were going to get, which everybody agrees it was too much, and so it's quite an ongoing battle that I've been writing about.
Lawrence Eagle Tribune reporter Bill Kirk. And finally, we finished the week with Dr. Christine McGrath, who is the Director of Operations for the Massachusetts Association of School Superintendents. She explained how there is a commonality among the difficulties that the superintendents of schools are facing.
Yes, not only is there a commonality, Rick, but there's been what I would call a sequence to their concerns that they have all shared. First was the challenge of taking your face-to-face brick-and-mortar process and moving it online.
Mm-hmm.
So that was phase one. So I'm going to talk about the common, and then I'm going to talk about the equity gaps across our Commonwealth. So how do I get up and running on remote learning? That was first and foremost. How do I make sure that I'm feeding my kids? How do I make sure that all of my families have a device so a child can participate in a remote learning? Many of them scrambled. Some were further ahead than others. So by the first 2 weeks of this, everybody was up and running with remote learning. The second phase was figuring out how do you make sure everybody's engaged and what's the criteria for assessing, adding value to the work that the children are doing. Phase three, so the commissioner initially said, you can take what you've taught thus far and go deeper into that curriculum taught to date. Phase three was more, no, we want you to go, now that we're going to be closed through the end of this academic year, we want you to take what you've taught, we want you to align that, what the commissioner has called essential standards in the curriculum, and we want you to advance the work according to, not everything, because you can't recreate it all, but according to those power standards. So that became a concern. I would say the three things that are foremost on their minds right now, one, because it's a loyalty to the legacy of their respective school districts. What am I going to do to culminate those wonderful celebratory activities we had for eighth graders, for children who are graduating? This is Teacher Appreciation Week. Teacher, congratulations, Rick. What are we going to do to celebrate? This is important to our seniors. This is important to our community. So that doesn't sound like a thing that's as huge as other issues, but that's important to the community. That's important to the students. So that's piece one that they're worried about. Piece two is fiscal. How do I land fiscal 20? How do I plan for fiscal 21? And in anticipation of appreciably reduced state revenues, what's the impact of fiscal 22? So they're concerned about that. And to that end, we're working with the Mass Association of School Business Officials, and we're providing a technical assistance program for our members and for their members next week to look at these are the things you have to keep your eye on with respect to state aid, circuit breaker, Student Opportunity Act. So graduation, celebratory, culture, positive culture things, number one. Finance is going to be huge, particularly as the state numbers come in, the House Ways and Means budget, the Senate, the joint, and then third is return and recovery and what that will look like.
Dr. Christine McGrath, Director of Operations for the Massachusetts Association of School Superintendents. Bill?
Thanks, Rick. We began our week this past week with an interview with Deb Ansourlian and talking about the Tuesday National Day of Giving. But Girls Inc. in Lynn has changed what they do drastically over the past several weeks. This is the executive director of Girls Inc. Lynn, Deb Ansourlian.
Right. We had to change our business model, actually. You know, we were for the most part, we did some on school, in school, and we did programming at our location at 50 High Street. And we really had to take a look at how we were going to stay in contact with the girls and support them. So the first thing that we did was we contacted all the families to find out what their needs were, making sure they're okay, that work continues. And then we have been doing virtual programming, and that is everything from homework help. We have our mentoring programs going on virtually, STEM programming, literacy, our leadership programming, our girls are meeting, helping them social, emotionally, every way that we can potentially help the girls stay engaged, stay focused, and continue to be stronger, smarter, and bolder.
Deben Cerulean, the executive director of Girls, Inc. in Lynn. Just down the street from them is the Lynn Museum. Their executive director, Danica Thurston, tells us that the Lynn Museum, again, closed to visitors, but still very busy with some new initiatives, including the outreach that they are seeking from the community to have the community tell them their stories regarding COVID-19.
So this is really just an opportunity to capture this moment in our city's history and to really hear from the community how they're experiencing this, how they're responding, and how they're going to make it through. This is an effort that a lot of historical-based institutions, whether it be museums or societies or archives, globally are trying to capture this moment and preserve this moment. And I think it's also very therapeutic to give the community an opportunity to really share what they're going through. I know a lot of us have adapted to the kind of the digital age of things, of what we're dealing with COVID. But for those folks who may not have an outlet to share or somewhere to vent, it's a great opportunity to just share. So it's been really interesting to see the responses coming through. They're largely positive. People that have responded thus far, it seems like, they've obviously been impacted. But in terms of, knowing folks that have been infected by the virus, a lot of the folks that have responded, luckily haven't lost anyone. I think it's just great to really see what's going on in the city of Lynn right now.
That is Danica Thurston from the Lynn Museum and Lynn Arts. And finally, a North Shore update on the coronavirus that was on salemnews.com posted Saturday. And as of Friday, there were 50 confirmed cases of coronavirus at Beverly Hospital and Addison Gilbert Hospital in Gloucester. Same as the previous 2 days, 7 of those patients were in intensive care. At North Shore Medical Center, that's Salem Hospital, they had 86 patients with coronavirus as of Thursday afternoon, 4 fewer than on Thursday. And there were also 19 inpatients receiving care in the ICU, 3 fewer than the previous days. And finally, we heard word at the end of last week that the Boston Pops, Boston Fireworks display on the 4th of July was canceled, not happening. We've also heard in the last week that several North Shore communities are postponing or delaying or canceling their Memorial Day celebrations. So now we look at the big picture, all the other 4th of July celebrations around the North Shore, which are certainly very likely not to happen this year. Friday, Governor Charlie Baker spoke to the fact that there will be no fireworks and Boston Pops Orchestra celebration at the Esplanade in Boston on the 4th of July.
No, it won't be. I've gone to it in my current job. I also went to it when my kids were younger, and we just sort of hung out on the grass and enjoyed it. And we've actually watched it from both sides of the river. It's actually kind of interesting to watch it on the Cambridge side. I think that's a really good example of something that won't happen this year. But I fully expect that people will come up with other ways of celebrating our nation's birthday, and I do think we need to remember that there are a lot of really creative people, not just here in Massachusetts, but all over the place, and they are constantly coming up with interesting ways to celebrate or communicate around a particular event that's been lost or a particular moment that they want to recognize, but they can't recognize in the way they have before. And that is, in fact, just kind of the way it's going to be for the time being. And I do believe that that kind of a gathering, especially since a lot of the folks who show up at that event aren't from Boston, they come from all over the place. It's a much harder event, like many of the others, the parades, for example, to actually create any kind of structure around how you could live up to some of the requirements with respect to distance and sort of safe public gathering. So I fully expect people will come up with some interesting ways to celebrate the 4th. Most of them will end up on social media, and a lot of us will have a chance to enjoy them one at a time as opposed to in one big event.
Governor Charlie Baker. On that note, we wrap up this Sunday edition of Connections. The Connections show airs weekdays at about 10 a.m. every weekday with the North Shore guests. We try to have positive guests and connect you to the stories making news around the North Shore. And we do like to hear from you. Email us at msonewsports@gmail.com, msonewsports@gmail.com. Or you can leave us a phone message 24/7, 978-325-3638, 978-325-3638. All that information is up at the top of our website on the Contact Us tab. Again, with Rick Moore, I'm Bill Newell. Thanks so much for joining us on Connections.